Hallelujah.
In our house underneath our floor, and we had carpet, and Rosa had to tear out the carpet and remove some of the floor trusses, and it was a mess. It was a total mess. And we had someone visit us, and these just things happen simultaneously. Somebody visited us and they flushed a diaper down our toilet, and it caused our spackle to be that we had spackle hanging from the ceiling. And I was looking at our floor, and I was sweeping up the plywood because, of course, that's what it was. And we didn't have any finances really to fix everything. And here was the Thanksgiving meeting coming, and Rokas was out of the house, so I was just really in a grouchy mood. And I thought, I can say what I really feel, because nobody's going to be here to hear it. And I'm sweeping this floor, and I'm saying, God, I hate this house. Ever since we moved here, there's been one problem after another. And here we're going to get all these people for our convention, and my house is going to look terrible. And it's going to be so embarrassing. And, you know, I was just ranting and raving, and nobody was around, so I just was saying it. In the midst of all of it, while I was sweeping the floor, because, you know, anybody, any woman that knows, when you have plywood, you know, the dust, we live in the country, and it was just, it was a mess. I'm sweeping away. God spoke to me. He says, so, what did you say when you first walked into this house? I so do not expect him to speak to me when I was grouchy. And I stopped and I said, because when we walked into the house, we had traveled for 4.5 years. And we knew God was going to direct us to a certain property. And he did, miraculously, to this property. And when I walked in, and then it was just a shell, because it was just a little log cabin. You know, I walked in, and I started speaking in tongues, and I said, this is my house. This is our house. Yes. We're supposed to be here, Rokas. And I knew it. I just began to worship God. And so I went back to that moment, and I said, you know, I said it was my house, and I would think, and I began to cry. I said, yes, God, I would be thankful. Even if I see all these deficiencies and people come in, I'm going to be proud of this house that you gave me, God.
Yes.
And I just, you know, I was flooded with thankfulness, and I'm just, you know, sweeping the floor. And then God spoke to me. He said, what did you say before you came into your physical home? I stopped and I said,
whoa.
I said, a body that has prepared for me, and I've come to do thy will. Yeah. I was thankful for this opportunity to be in the earth. I mean, I knew it. I knew that I saw my life, and I said, yes, Lord. And I was thankful. He says, well, then why have you spent your whole life resisting your life? Whoa! I looked over my life. I looked over all my childhood experiences, and I had a lot of wonderful things. I looked at what I went through with a very difficult divorce and losing custody of my children. And I could understand why, you know, I'd been a good person and why this could happen to me. And I couldn't understand, you know, because we had this image, like I was saying last night, of what it is. You know, I was a PK, I was a preacher's kid, and things like this should not have happened to me. And they did. I looked at all of them and I realized I've been resisting my life. I didn't know they were, like Roka said, my opportunity to be here. My opportunity to experience humanity and walk out as an overcomer and thereby be life for other people.
Yes.
You know, when you don't know pain, you can't really help somebody that has pain. If you don't know what it is to go through great loneliness and disappointment, how can you ever touch somebody that is lonely and disappointed? And I began at that time, I had had my experience. I had had an experience when I was complaining, and God gave me a vision. The room went white, and I saw this huge Rolodex, and it stopped, And I saw this writing concerning me. And one of the things that it said to me in the second paragraph, she will have controversy in court. But even though I saw that, there was still something in me that said I did something wrong. If I had done things differently legally, maybe, you know, I could have got this or what, you know. But I had never began to truly embrace my life and who I was and the circumstances of my life. Because therein you find victory. Therein you find the spirit of being an overcoming. God, I will take this cup and I will drink this cup of who I am. And I will fully be who you are in me in this experience. I will fully be. Rather, you know, sometimes we want to be more articulate. We want to be taller. We want our circumstances to be different. But if we just know that I have been made, just like these charts, you know, I was came down here to do some of my stretches this morning, and I thought, what a wonderful thing to totally embrace the message that comes through Connie, that if we know that we came out of a certain star sign at a certain time on earth for the particular purpose that the Father has for us. He put us through a certain gene line. He gave us a certain appearance, everything. Now, I'm not saying, you know, hey, I was down here exercising. I want to do the best of what I got. But I sure don't want to go through my life wishing my life was different, wishing I was different. I want to be all that He is in me to creation. And how wonderful that is. How wonderful that is. Then you begin to love people. You begin to know that the person, the spouse that you're with, the children that you have, the circumstances of your life are all around you so that you can love and be who you need to be.
Yes.
And you can lose all sense of guilt sometimes. Because, you know, we can go through life just so, you know, full of guilt and would've, should've, could've, you know, and, you know, I've done that. You know, if I said something wrong, I'm like, oh, gosh, why? I could have said it differently. I didn't mean to hurt that person. And, you know, I'll spend all day, and then Rokas will look at me and say, Sam, there's always tomorrow. You know, if you said it wrong yesterday, well, then maybe tomorrow you'll be more in touch with the people around you, and you can love that person. Maybe you needed that experience so you can turn around and make something different of it today. We can live in a way that's so victorious, not because our lives are perfect. You know, people don't want to see perfect people. They really don't. They want to see people that care for them. When you're in Walmart and you look somebody in the eye and you really think about giving them life and caring for them, that's what they want. That's truly being Christ in the earth.
Yes.
It's truly loving. They don't want a lot. It's good to have information, revelation. I got a tremendous husband that I'm so fortunate to be married to. But people really just want to know that you can identify them with them. And that's what Jesus does. You know, that's when He first came to me. You all know the story. I was down to 90-some pounds. I really didn't want to live. I was like, beat me up, Scotty. I can't have my kids. I'm out of here. I don't want to live. I just knew it. My kids were everything to me, because I had a very difficult marriage. So I slept with my kids. That was me. That was it. I didn't want any more. So when they were taken, very violent circumstance, and they were taken, and there I was, 90-some pounds, and I had heard about Jesus. I was a preacher's daughter. That's why I thought, hey, this can't happen to me. I've been a good person. I haven't done anything. This cannot be happening to me. I mean, you know, I when I grew up, my siblings told me I would never say a cuss word. I read the Bible every day.
You know, I was one of those goody two-shoes that you can't be around, because it was so sickening.
But anyways, when I was there, and I'm laying on my bed, and like I said, I was 90-some pounds. I Mom couldn't get me to eat. I thought, I'm just going to fade away. What I still live for, you know? And I was on my stomach. And the presence, I had heard of Jesus, knew He died for my sins. He was wonderful, you know. We sang songs to Jesus, and I believed in Him. But as I was laying on my stomach, a presence came into the room and stood in front of my bed.
And that presence I am instantaneously was Jesus. I knew it. I stopped crying. And it was so sweet. And what was so incredible to me is everybody was saying, oh, it's okay, I'm thinking, yeah, it's okay for you, you've got the kids. That's what I'm thinking, I'm not saying that, but I'm thinking. But I knew he knew my pain. I knew he knew it. It was the most incredible experience. Like, he knew me. He understood. And I felt this incredible sweetness and strength just began to come into my body. And I just stopped. I was crying. I just stopped. And I didn't want to move a muscle because I was afraid it was going to leave. And then I heard these words, and they weren't from the mouth, but they came into me. And I heard these words, carry your cross with dignity as I did. And I thought about it. You know, he didn't say what I wanted to say. I'm going to give you your kids back. Everything's going to be good. You know, everything's going to be wonderful. You're not going to have to go through a 2-year court battle, you know, the whole bit that I went through. No, he didn't say those things. He just said, carry your cross with dignity as I did. And something hit me and I sat up. After the presence then just began, I never saw him, but I knew it was him. And I had had experiences with, like, angels, and I had an out-of-body experience when I was 17, but this was different. Man, this was totally different. This is Christ, the one who gives you the power to walk your life out, that empowers you and gives you hope like nothing else can. And it began to leave. And I sat up, and I took my tears. I can do this. I can do this.
Yes.
I am more than a mother, and I will live. And I went out, my mother, who was such a gracious, wonderful, fantastic woman, and I went out, and I just said, Mom, can you make me something to eat?
She started crying. Of course, you know, nothing like a mom with a love. You know? And I started crying. We began to hold. She
says, Carolyn, what happened? I says, Jesus came to me, Mom, and I'm going to make it. I'm going to live. And I began to live, and I began to know myself and know him. You know, if I hadn't gone, you know, years later when my children were 18, 19, they came back, and, you know, it was awesome. We're very close, and life has turned out tremendous, you know. But that experience, you know, I'm so thankful for. Because I would have stayed in a certain box, you know. I would have never married this wonderful, fantastic man either if my life hadn't turned out that way. But that's what he is, and that's what we are to others. We actually are that. When we identify with them, when we open our beings to them, we help them, we empower them to walk out their lives. We can't change their lives. Jesus could have changed my life, but he knew that cross that I was going to bear in my life would be an opening for me to love people, yes, to touch people. Because really, before then, nothing really had ever happened to me. I'd always had a happy life, you know. But after that, I began to touch people, you know, in a way that I never could. And I found the empowerment to live above my circumstances or through my circumstances, like Karen was saying. This experience that you're going through is your avenue of release, yes, your avenue of strength, your avenue of authority. All of that comes through the circumstances of our lives as we let him live in us and move and have his being in us, through us, as us. You know, as Trish, you know. Nobody's ever going to be Trish, you know, like you. You're the only one. It's good that you're it. You're it. You're his avenue for you. Yes. As you to creation. And that's a wonderful thing. And guess what? It doesn't bring ego consciousness, because then you want to hear other people. Because you want to hear God in them. What's happened to them? What are they going through? How's he coming through them? You know? Amen. So it's wonderful. I felt so full and so thankful to be here with all of you. And I was sitting there and I was feeling you all and feeling your lives and what you've gone through and seeing this message on the wall, and I'm thinking, how great, how wonderful Connie and Johnny for their home for so many years. Make a place for people to come. Such a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's great honor and spirit for both of you.
I can
laugh. I can cry. I am a part of you. I can touch.
I can feel. I know your frailty. Well, you are crucified on time and space in your humanity. Oh, but I am you, and you are me. We live in eternity.
Thank you, Carolyn. Indeed. How good.
How good that is.
You know, I like to record. Like Carolyn, I've never heard her share it like that before. <You know? laughs> I'm good. We got another teenager at the back. Yeah. Well, we've got a few at home, but you know, if I could bypass all of you and get to you this afternoon, I'd do it in a minute, because you. Young people, you teenagers, you're the hope for tomorrow. You're the ones that can make change. It's really hard for some of us to make change. God, you know, that's why I carry 3 pennies with me all the time, so if I can pay. I don't want all that change. So there you go. All right, I've got something in my mind I want to try to share with you, but before we get into it, I got to sort of create a setting for this. You know, you were referring to the body has many parts, different functions, they serve one another. But all of them, whether it's your ears to connect auditory waves, to connect the dog, here's Karen coming up, the dog already knows that somebody's coming, you know, and so sound is such a wonderful part of our perceptual world, and feeling, I can touch, I can feel, feeling and eyesight even more. I mean, what would you give for your eyesight, you know? Hearing, I remember one time I stuffed some toilet paper down in my ears because I was at a Pentecostal holiness church and it was just too much. I wanted to hear it, but not quite that much, you know? So I tried to deafen the sound down a little, and it got stuck in there, and it built wax around it, formed a great big wad in my ear, and I didn't even know it. And things got really tough. I couldn't sing. I couldn't hear myself. Life really became dismal with only one ear operating. And so I went out to a little walk-in clinic, and they flushed it out, and out came this big wad. And I got so happy. I mean, I got just ecstatically happy, just got beside myself happy because I could hear again. You know, what do you think about people that just have to give up a whole part of their perceptional world? They have to give up their eyesight, or they have to learn to get along without maybe being able to perambulate, you know, to go from one place to another, have a leg you can shake, you know, when other people get it cut off for the same reasons and you still have yours. That's cause for joy. Joy, the body. The body is cause for joy, but the body is made for you to interact with this physical realm. It's physical. Its ability, or the neural synapses in your brain hold awareness. Of course, the whole body holds awareness, but it's through the body that you interact, that you live, that you react, that you create experiences. The body is the way that you exist in this three-dimensional world. But the body really holds your perception of self. It holds consciousness. It holds thoughts and awarenesses of who you are. And they change dramatically throughout life, right? And you get glimpses of what you can be. You see images of people on TV that have done things that you'd like to do. So you create those images in your mind, and then you pursue after them. That's the way life is meant to be. You're meant to perceptualize. You're meant to image, to create the image world first, and then live in it. And when your image world is in conflict with your reality, when you've been given images and you've adopted them from your religious background particularly, or from a social background, your mom and dad have mistreated you, or your siblings, or whatever the world that you were in has, and you know you've been mistreated, and there's conflict in your mind about who you want to be, then you will have to work out that conflict so that you can align your perceptual world, the world that you see, the world that you want, you can align it and become harmonious to strive after that world. But no matter who you are, where you are, how intelligent, how dumb you think yourself to be, it doesn't really make much difference. It's all relative, like in Arkansas. It's all relative. And so, doesn't matter. The way to create your life is through perceptions. To open your mind, open your heart. Now, it's more than just, like when Carolyn was ministering so beautifully, it isn't just the words that she says, it isn't just only the way she says them, there's a whole perception of life and light that comes, floods over you, and you see it, and you say, yes, I can be that, yes, yes, my life can be. When Spirit comes and ministers in a song or in words, or then you make a choice, and you say, yes, I can be that, I can change, I can become. It's an unconscious thing, but there has to be something created in you that you can perceive so that you can become that. That's good to know then. It's good to know it isn't just automatic. And you hold and govern the doors of your perception. You say, I don't want to see that. Then you won't see it. They won't force it on you. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to remember the time when that somebody took me as a child into the cornfield. I don't want to remember that. It's too painful. But then there comes a time when it's too painful not to go there. When you stand at the thought, at the brink of a thought that you'll be forever trapped, even in just this life, in a frequency of not knowing, that's just too small for you. You want to become, they say, okay, I'll go, I'll do it, I'll go. And then you open your heart mind, and then you find that it's not painful at all. Because it's really like somebody else. It's really just an experience that you created. That you helped to create, or that was created for you. See? So, you have an imaginer, and that's what I sort of want to... Imagination can be a wonderful thing, can be horrible things. Yeah. Can you imagine being trapped in pornography? It's not hard to imagine. Plenty of people are. Right? God. Because that imagination is so powerful, and that need for sexual fulfillment is so deep in our whole makeup. I mean, we were created like that. It's meant to be that way. And when that's totally unfulfilled, and you can't see any way of it being fulfilled, because you put up some walls, because maybe something happened to you. And then you want to fill that anyway, and you become totally, and it happens to people. Why? Through their imaginer. So, because the imaginer is so powerful and so wonderful, it can be misused. It can be used to damn you or to glorify you. How great, just the extreme, the thing goes both ways so wonderfully and beautifully. So you have an imaginer. So I want to appeal to your imaginer. I want to say a couple of things that I don't really know. Is it okay for me to say something I don't really know? I just think. I think that in the same way that you have a body in this physical realm that's physical, through which you can interact with this environment, so in the worlds of light, you have a body of light. Yes. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. I personally haven't ever seen that. Carolyn has, but I've never just seen it. She has. She's seen a shaft of light right down the core of who she is. Core of light, 2-inch tube of pulsating living light. Right? And she said, whoa, this is strange. And she saw herself fold herself into that light. So there's an interdimensional way to go from one to the other. There's a way to go from your light body awareness to your physical body awareness. There's a connection. There's a wormhole. I don't know. Whatever. There's a tunnel. There's a way to get from another perception of self that Johnny called your spiritual self and your physical self. They're really connected. They're really not two of you in the light world and in the physical world, but we have to talk about them as being separate in order to get some handle on it. They're not separate. You're only one of you. Do you ever only be one of you? You're not into three parts, body, soul. You can't divide yourself into... There's only one. There's only you. But to talk about, you have to talk about the engine and the body. And the engine has its own computer system, and the body don't need one. The doors are just the doors. The computer will tell you if the door is open, but it doesn't tell you anything about the door. It doesn't call you color the door, nothing. But the engine needs that computer in the car. So we separate the body and the engine because they're very different function. But really, the car is not a car without an engine, nor is it a car without a body. So you are not you without either one. You need both. You need a body, whether it's a body of physical body or it's a body of light. You need a body to hold your consciousness.
Yes.
That's the greatest purpose of the body, is to hold the awareness of self so it can grow and become, right? So this body of light, I was sort of wondering about it, and Carolyn had the experience of seeing a tube down the center of her body, and I ran into this book this guy had, and the book, he described exactly what Carolyn had seen, so I thought, well, maybe this guy's on the QT, maybe this guy's all right, maybe this guy's okay, even if he doesn't believe like I do, doesn't have the same spiritual world that I live in, but he saw something that I'd never seen, and that Carolyn saw, so maybe it's okay for me to listen to this guy a little bit. We're sort of afraid, aren't we? I am. I don't want to get trapped in some useless merry-go-round. It's possible, right? We've been there. Maybe we need to be worried about more about where we've been than where we're going, but we've been trapped on the merry-go-round for 2,000 years, right? A certain perceptional world, and we just couldn't get out of it. And the Renaissance came, and Industrial Revolution, and finally, in this last century, the Holy Spirit came again and just shattered everything, just shattered our religious consciousness, just totally busted it. And we're left sort of, some of us are the victims or the sort of the casualties of that breakup. But we survived. We survived. Not only did we survive, but we're beginning to open a whole new world, a whole new way of living, a whole new way of thinking, a whole new way of being together in a spiritual awareness, a whole new way of worshiping. And it's okay however you do it, because tomorrow you'll do it differently. So whatever we're doing today is okay, and tomorrow we'll do it in another way. Well, in that world of light, this guy says, I hate to say this guy says, but that's the best I can do at the moment. If I ever get a vision or a better perception of it, I'll say, well, cancel that out. Here's another one. Or better yet, just form your own. Open your mind and say, God, I can hear anything you want me to say. I have direct access. I can go back, Father, to the place I came from. I come back to my origin. I can hear you. Father, you can talk to me about anything you want to talk. I'm not restricted. I don't need to have a religious robe. I don't have to say mumble jumbo. I don't have to say the right religious phrases. I don't have to behave right, do right, nothing. God, I'm yours. I am of the light, and I can know the things that pertain to the light.
Amen.
That's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Right?
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's no conditions, no requirements, no stipulations. There's no, you have access to God and to the light that you are without requirements, without restriction. You're the one that says, I'm not good enough. You're the one that says, I didn't do it right. You're the one, and because you say those things, you create a world where you can overcome. It's not so much overcoming the things you did wrong, it's overcoming the thought that doing wrong disqualifies you from God.
There you are. Yeah, there.
And I think humanity has struggled with that for a long time. Religion, all the religions of the world have embraced that thought. If you accept our enlightenment, if you listen to our guru, if you do the mantras, if you say, get the right crystals or whatever, hold the crucifix or look at a stained glass window, whatever the conditions, if you follow those conditions, then you will be spiritually qualified to hear from God. How? Yeah, yeah. Well, it was true, it's the eggshell. It's the eggshell. What was the eggshell for? Well, it kept you where you needed to be until it was changed its function. Now it becomes your prison. The thing that kept you safe became your prison.
Yes.
And that chick's got a little anger going on. Something going on in it, and it turns against the thing that protected it and begins to chip away at it. And it needs that emotion. It needs that determination. It needs that empowerment against whatever it's against. You needed that to break through. But once you break through and look at the whole thing and say, there's that shell. Whoa, thank God for that shell. That was wonderful. Whew, I made it. I'm out. Glory. What a great world I'm in. Thank you for that eggshell. If it hadn't been for that eggshell, wow, God, I couldn't even exist. Thank you, Father. Glory. I hope we come to that. So in that world of light, this guy says, you are like a star tetrahedron. Well, you know, there it is. One triangle pointing up, right? And one triangle pointing down. And the one triangle comes from above and slides over top. And the one triangle comes up and you have a six-pointed star. Star of David. Now switch that to three dimensions. You have a four-sided four-sided pyramid-shaped object pointing down. Heaven. You have a four-sided tetrahedron like a little pyramid pointing up. You push the two into each other till the point comes out the top and not the bottom, and now you have this eight-pointed star. Carl, the star tetrahedron. Now, and then you spin the one this way and spin the other way. Now, what does that spinning do? Well, it creates circuitry. It creates a flow. It creates points. There's that eight-pointed star has 64 points in it. And those points, the circuitry can flow around those points. It has definition. It's like a body for electrical magnetic currents to flow. And what can it do? It can hold information. Right? Information. And because it can hold information, it can hold consciousness. It can hold an awareness of who you are in the worlds of light. So you're in the worlds of light, you're like an energy ball with counter-rotating fields of light. That's what he says. Neat idea. Can I put my 100% vote on this? Is absolutely correct? No. But guess what? It's a way of thinking about yourself away from this physical plane. He says, are you just a sort of a wisp floating around out there like a vapor, like some of the movies portray it, you know? Or are you like a shadow that flits and flips around? He says, no. He says, you're two counter-rotating fields of light, powerful energy that holds this information about who you are in the worlds of light. That's what my problem, if I have a problem. Why admit to a problem? If I have a problem about reincarnation, it's this. It doesn't answer where you came from. It doesn't answer who you are. So what if you existed in another life? I'm okay. I'm incarnate, so maybe I could be reincarnate. I'm definitely incarnate. I'm in a physical body, but I'm more than this physical body. I know that. I just don't believe that now. I've shifted from believing something to knowing something. Can't persuade anybody else of it, but that doesn't matter. I know I'm spirit, because what I can feel when I say it, when I say, I am spirit, oh, I am life, I know, I can feel it. It goes all through me. It's joy, empowerment. I can face situations knowing that I come at it from a greater point of view than just the experience of it. I'm more than just a mother struggling with a teenage son. I am that. I'm acting out those roles. But I'm really in this world of light creating an experience for myself so I can know my father, know my origin, know who I am and what I can become. So you have a context in which to think about yourself. That's so wonderful. That's, you know, you can step outside. How can you step outside? There's no place to step to. There's no imagination going on in your world, in your thinking, about who you might be beyond this physical body. Then there's hardly a way to extract yourself from it and look at it. I can step outside of this physical body because I'm not this physical body. I can step into the awareness of my light body and look at my physical body and wonder at it like Carolyn did. When the spirit creates, can you imagine how powerful the hold the physical body has on it? And physical consciousness. God has to just drop you out of a tree for 12 feet. God has to take you in a house that's full of fungus and get you really upset and mad and angry so he can finally talk to you through that house, get you thinking about the real house. The real house wasn't plywood, and the real house God wanted to talk to her about was this physical house that she'd been struggling in. And she didn't want to, God didn't want to blame her or make her feel bad about having struggled against her incarnate self. She wanted to own the awareness that you've struggled. And he wants you to ask, well, God, why do I struggle against this body? He didn't want you to feel bad about struggling against this body. He wants you to ask. He wants you to say, okay, God, why do I struggle against this body? That's my opportunity. And when you ask, the doors open. If you just don't ask, the reason you don't ask is because you assume you know. Think about that. The reason you don't ask is because you assume you know. And what you assume you know is probably not true. The reason you don't ask, why is my life like this, because you know, because you're screwed up. Everybody told you you're screwed up. You know you screwed up. You didn't do it right. So it never occurs to you to ask. Because you think you know the answer. So somebody's got a jar. Somebody's got to shake the pot. Somebody's going to say no. No. That is not your relationship with the world of light, with God. Your relationship isn't based on whether you've done it right or not. The question isn't whether you did it right or whether you did it wrong. That's not the question. The question is, how does that affect my connection with God and in the light? And the fact is, it don't. That's the truth. And we're ready for that truth now. It's been withheld from us. Through long ages, that truth has been withheld. Why? It's like the eggshell. It needed to be there. You know? All right, so here's why I want to... Here's one of the reasons I love the scriptures is because they give you an anchoring point. They give you, when a world of thought comes to you and you're struggling into it and you're beginning to change your awareness because you don't want to fit anymore where you're at. It's not satisfying, so you want to change, so you begin to reach out. You start reading around a little bit, see what different people have said, the experience throughout the centuries. You go beyond the periphery of what your experience and your light world is and go a little further. And you want to change, then the world is sort of in a turmoil, it's like chaos, and then you need something to hang on to when this storm is blowing, man, the tornado's on, 60 mile an hour, 80, 150 mile an hour wind, you got to have something to hang on to, right? So this scriptures, the words of Jesus especially for me, and there's nice somebody did this, They put it all in red. What do you say? That is so nice. I don't know why they did that. But it really helps me because I want to flip through and find something you said. So, and the disciples came and said unto him, why do you speak to them in parables? And he answered them and said, because it's given unto you to know the mystery. He was just hoping they'd ask. He'd been talking in parables to the Pharisees and just sort of watching those disciples and saying, all right, boys, are you getting this? She said, well, Lord, we don't know what you're talking about. Well, let me explain it to you. That isn't the point. The point is, I'm saying things to them, allowing you to see that they can't get it, hoping that you'll realize that you can get it. You can get it, right? So he says, it's given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. Well, that doesn't fit with our universalist ideas here. Some of our universalist ideas think that Jesus wants to tell everybody the truth. Well, he didn't hear him. Maybe he's changed. I don't know. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance, but whosoever hath not, for him shall be taken. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because they seeing see not, hearing hear not, neither do they understand, and then it's fulfilled. And he goes back to prophet Isaiah. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see and have not seen them, and to hear the things that you hear and have not heard them. Therefore hear the parable of the sower. Now, he said, I will open my mouth in parables and utter things hid from the foundation of the world. Now, I always thought that the foundation of the world was back there somewhere, where the world was created. The foundation's got to be back where it was created. Well, if you're in the house, the foundation isn't back there somewhere. The foundation's underneath. Right? So, I will utter things that are hidden in the elementary principles of creation. I will utter things that are hidden in the quantum world that are not visible. The quantum world is invisible to the eye. Right? Particles are so small you can't see them. Light can't go down there because when the light hits something, it bounces it away. So you can't see it. So it's never will you be able to see the quantum world in the way that you see the physical plane. So we know all about that. Science has talked to us about it. So I'm going to show you things in the quantum world that you haven't been able to see, but that are necessary for you to understand, to know how things function and operate. I want you to know the kingdom. Then he starts telling parables. Now, here's where I want to go a little bit. And he answered them, he said, he that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. Now, the field, the world isn't the planetary globe. The field is the physical realm. The world of physicality, it's this physical universe, right? Jesus is really big. I mean, he thinks really, you get into his mind, he lived 2,000 years ago, he never saw the History Channel, but the field is the physical plane or the physical realm, and in the physical realm there are the good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. That was a bad one, you know, because when we were trying to understand that from our religious consciousness, well, the good ones are the ones that come to church with us. And the bad ones are down the road getting drunk. But God wants to get the bad ones and save them and come to church. That was our limited thinking. That's the way we lived. That was in the eggshell. So don't be too hard on us. What else could we think? But we were really part of the Pharisaic world that couldn't understand. The religious mind can't understand because it's so biased and so ego-controlled and so self-centered, right? And that's where we were, that's where they were, it's okay. He says, the field is the world, the good seeds are the children of the kingdom, and the tares are the children of the wicked one. And now this is a lot of duality going on here. We're wanting to move into oneness. We don't want more duality and separation and saying this is bad and this is good. We don't know, well, Jesus, weren't you very enlightened here or what's going on? No, he said, I'm uttering things from the foundation of the world. I'm talking about the elementary principles of this physical creation. I'm showing you that the physical creation was created to create contrast between two kinds of seed. And God's not trying to get rid of the bad ones to have the good ones. And he's trying to not make the good ones win over the bad ones. God needs the contrast between the good and the bad for something else to happen. Something greater than good or bad. So he's talking about fundamental principles of reality that lay beneath the feet of our experience. And the reason he's doing that is so that we can begin to live in harmony, create our imaginer in harmony with those principles. See? So, I'll just take 1 minute to show you that this is a fundamental principle of laying at the beginning of things. In the second or third chapter of Genesis, God says to the Eve, after they come through the experience of good and bad, after they come through the experience of eating from a tree of knowledge of good and evil, all at once there's such a sudden dramatic change in their experience of themselves, and they don't understand what happened to this, and they're crying out to God, God, what happened to us? Why are we going? What's this about? Why are you doing this? What's our journey? And he says to them, he says, okay, I'll give you an explanation. He said, there's two seeds. And the seed of the woman and the serpent, you know, this thing that you felt that caused you to participate in this duality realm, this serpent mentality, he says it's like a seed. It wants to propagate itself. It wants to seed itself. It has control at a certain level. But you're the seed that comes from you will bruise. It will bruise your heel. It'll knock you down. When your heel gets bruised, you knock you down, right? It'll knock you down. It will. It's part of the journey. He says, but you will crush the head of this serpent mentality, because the whole journey that I've got you here in this planet, and of course, now when we go back to Genesis, we're not talking about all of physical reality now. We're now talking about a scenario that's being unfolded here on this planet that we are a part of. You're a part of this journey. You're a part of this two-seed thing. And the seeds are both in you too. The serpent mentality is in you, and the divine mentality, the woman of life, Eve is the beginner of all life, are both in you, and the struggle is in you as well as it's out in the world. It's reflected in the world for you, but the struggle, the overcoming, is in you, the becoming. And you've come through this journey because there's a great intent and purpose. Now, for a brief moment, if I can, I want to take you back to a further place of origin. Now, why go back to a place? What do I care whether I came from the stars? Tell me something I need to know now. Well, you need to know now that you came from the stars so that you know you have the empowerment to live in the now. Yeah. The empowerment from the living in the now doesn't come from the now. It doesn't come from being smart. It doesn't come from being intelligent. It doesn't come from having common sense. It doesn't come from having money or not money. Your empowerment for living in the now comes from your awareness that you're eternal and that you came from God. Okay. So you got to own that. You got to own that awareness. Jesus can bring it to you, see? Jesus can bring that awareness because he was ultimately particularly sent into this planet to bring an awareness of our divine origin. He taught his disciples to pray, Our Father. He didn't teach them to pray, O Yahweh. He didn't. He used the term Father particularly because Father is the point and source of origin, of essence, of being. The essence of who and what you are comes from God. It doesn't come from some alien that did something on this planet or didn't do whatever happened to get your body here. I don't really care too much. I'd like to know. Really, I would. But I really don't care too much how you got this body that you're living in. I really don't care too much how it was created. I do. I'd really like to know. Just, you know. But God, I'd really like to know how we got these bodies. Why we look like we do. And why the different races on this planet. I'd really like to know the answers. But it really ultimately doesn't matter because the body is just a container for your eternal self. It's your eternal self that came from God. It's that being of light that you are, that lives in the worlds of light, that wanted a body, that wanted to create an experience in this flesh. Why? Not so that, just so it could have a flesh experience and be disappointed and joy and have children, not have children and get busted and fall out of a tree or have a kid that won't listen to you, all that wonderful stuff. That you didn't come just to have that. You came here so that your eternal being could understand that it came from the light, that it could know its Father. Your eternal being wants to know something, wants to understand something, and it's using your physical experience to create stuff in your life so you can look at it, but it's your eternal being that's asking the questions. Your natural man, your ego self, it doesn't care, it just wants to get drunk or get rich or something, right? Whatever the desires are, it just wants to live in those desires and do its thing and hope it don't die before it gets there and all that. But the eternal self is the one inside. The eternal self is saying, no, I don't want my life to become a waste. I want to live. I want to become. That's your eternal being wants to have control, at least to the effect that it can control the kinds of experience it needs and not be trapped in a bar someplace or in a whatever, right? So that it can be free to... Because the experiences that you create in this body are really, really valuable to your eternal self. And if you're trapped, and there's many ways to be trapped. You'll be trapped in really good things, or you can trip, but they're all entrapments if you're not open. If you're not free, if you're not free to think, if you're not free to experience, then the eternal self can't create the experiences it needs. So that's why it's interested in having you free. Right now, let me go back, just having said all that, let me go back to, I think the most fundamental, simplest fundamental thought that we need to imagine. Because the only way to go there is through the imagination. Because this imagination that you have in this physical world is meant for you to live in this physical world, primarily. But it can also help you understand the eternal things. That's why Jesus told parables, because they help you create an image. So I want to create an image in your mind of how you began, how we began. How did I begin? Where did I start? Well, and I do believe I have a beginning. The scriptures say this. They say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In the beginning was the Word. The beginning of what? The beginning of consciousness as we know it. The beginning of consciousness as a physical being in you began at your first thoughts that you can consciously remember. Now you have thoughts in your mind from what happened to you as a child that if you will allow them, if you'll go there, if you would practice and work at it, you could remember the crib that you were laying in. You could remember the first time you saw your mother. It's all in here, right? Perceptionally. But you can't remember what's not there. What you didn't experience, you can't remember experiences you didn't have. You don't need to remember them, but it seems silly to say that. But still, and in the same way as you can remember the experiences that brought you into a physical, that you began to have as a physical being, the same way you can remember the experiences you had when you first became a being of light. how did you begin? Well, that's for I like the idea of a hologram. I've talked about that. You know a little bit about that. The difference between a hologram, a picture, an ordinary black and white picture, if you cut it in half, you know, and there's your ex on the one side and you on the other, and you're just ready to divorce it. So you rip the picture in half, and she's on one side and you're on the other. Thank God, I'm done with that, right? You can do that with a negative. Cut it. But you can't do that with a hologram. If you cut a hologram, a negative, that's used to create the hologram, that negative, we call that the hologram, if you cut it in half and shine the light through half, you get exactly the same picture as the other. It gets a little dimmer. Cut it in half again, no matter how small you make it, shine the laser light through it, you still get the same image. That's how God is. When you existed in God, you existed in the whole of Him. You didn't exist on the left or the right, in the middle, you were non-local. That's a good scientific term to use nowadays. Non-locality. In God, all things are one. You were part of the Great One. You couldn't think about yourself as separate from God. Couldn't, didn't, wouldn't, whatever. So what happened that you came? Where did you come from? God is one. How did you begin? Well, God had a desire. And how do I know that? Because everything in your life begins with a desire. You see this woman. God, hit your heart, hit your groin. Bam! Desire. Desire, and you'll start to figure out, what do I need to get her? What do I need to do here? What do I say? If I say what I really think, she's gonna smash me. I better not say that. I've already had that happen to me, so I want to do this right. See, so desire comes, and desire creates, a thought hits, desire comes, and then it begins to create. So God had a thought, and the thought was, what if I could have somebody that I could love, and that would love me? How beautiful a thought is that? What if I could have somebody to love? Have you known people that have carried that thought? Some of them have carried it their whole lifetime and never found it. Some have just blundered into it. There's somebody that would love you with their whole heart. God. And that you could love with your whole heart. And that you could trust. And now it's partly an imagination, because life gets pretty rough. You know, we get pretty disappointed. But you don't stop imagining that, do you? You don't say, well, that's never possible. I mean, just go watch one of the wonderful Hollywood movies. You'll know what can happen. Watch the Titanic or whatever, right? Or ask Carolyn and I. It can. It is. There is true love. Really. There is love. Love exists. Even if I would never experience it, I know that love exists. And that thought in God began to create. And he says, well, how can I do this? How can I ever have someone to love? I'm the whole of things. There isn't anybody but me. Well, this is all... God, how can we think about eternal things in linear minds that are spatially oriented? How can we think about this? We can't, but we do. We have to. You have to create some kind of... So you say, okay, God, you wanted what it was like to be further another. So you went to the dictionary. You went to Oxford Dictionary and looked up other. And there was other. The word other didn't exist in God's vocabulary. There wasn't any other. So he began to imagine the other. God began to imagine the other. He created a world, an illusionary world, to fill his desire.
Yes, he did. Amen.
And in that illusionary world of separation, which is not real. So now this is what all the New Age world is full of today, is that the world of separation is an illusion. And they're right, they're absolute illusion. But what they don't know is that the illusion is what God wanted. God wanted this illusion so you could think about yourself as existent apart from Him. So you could turn around and slap Him in the face. God, I hate this house. Whew, I've been waiting for you to say it. I know you felt that way. Why didn't you just say it? He's not going to lose. How can He lose you? How can God lose you? So go ahead, get mad at Him, whatever you got to do to get the truth out, to find out what you're really thinking. So God imagined in Himself that you could exist, that you could be, and there you were. That's how you began. You began as a thought in God. And I sort of happen to believe, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I like to believe and I like to think that for every being of light that exists, there is a unique thought in God for that being. And that you can ask what that thought is. Now, I'm going to take a lot of courage for you to ask. That somebody said that yesterday, we're not scared of the bad stuff, we're really scared of the really good stuff. We're really scared of the really good. The really good stuff is God. Is there a thought in you that is so uniquely me and that you love without boundaries and that I can love you in return without boundaries? Is that really true? For God, am I really that important to you that you were willing to suffer the pain of having something separated from you as me, creating a hole in your own heart that would be unfulfilled if I didn't come back? Can it be that real? It is. That's how real it is. There's a hole in God's heart that if you don't come back to it, it'll be forever, ever, 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 ever empty, longing for you. Longing for you all the time. Longing for you, longing eternally through untold worlds, untold ages. Longing for you, waiting for you, knowing that ultimately you have to come and ask. You have to come say, God, who am I? Where did I come from? What's your purpose for my life? Hallelujah. See, and that's what Jesus is wanting to take his disciples to. That's what he said. I want to talk to you about the foundational principles. I want you to know what it was that started. I want you to know how the Father began. Because through the ages of darkness, in order for this program to succeed, some, by the power of free will given, had to turn to the darkness. Had to turn against the light. They had to turn against God Himself in order to create the contrast. I need darkness and light. I need darkness and light. I need the darkness so you will long for the light. I need the darkness of your life so you'll long for the light. I need the emptiness of your life so you'll long for the wholeness. I need the separation in your life so you can understand and imagine what wholeness would be like. That's how the world is. That's what the kingdom is about. The kingdom is about those great, profound, wonderful principles in God's heart. And all of history is subject. Obama is subject to that. Oh, Jesus, thank you. I was wondering if he's subject to anything. He's subject. The political scene, the national scene are all... Yeah, we have free will. There's no doubt about it. At every level of our existence, we have a measure of free will. But we don't have the amount of free will to cancel out God's great, eternal, wonderful purpose. I don't think so. You are His creation. You owe Him. Everything that you are, you owe Him. And He never, ever, you know, I tell you this. You know, you owe me. You never heard that said, do you? Who hasn't heard that? Kid, I raised you. You owe me. I feel that way about my kids sometimes. I learn not to say that. Smart enough not to say that. And then I say, oh, God, they don't owe me anything. They're the great gift. God, they don't owe me because they owe you. And I just feeling this for them, for you, God. I feel this because we all owe you, God. And God never, ever, ever says to you, you owe me. He won't. He's not going to say it. He'll hold his breath for eternity on end until you say it. You say, God, I owe you. He says, son, I know that. But that doesn't govern our relationship. I love you, my son. I love you in a way that you can't even imagine, son. You're me. You're part of me. You're whole. I require nothing of you. I require no restitution. I require no repentance. I require nothing. Only that you would seek yourself. Only that you would desire to know yourself. Only that you would choose a road for yourself. And of course that road takes you back home. If you choose to live, you come home. If you choose to be you, if you say, okay, I am something. Hell, I don't know what it is. I don't like what I've seen. I don't like what I understand. I don't like what I've been told. But I know I got to be good because you're God. God, I want to know who I am. I want to know myself. Know thyself. You know, what does it say over the door? Then I don't self be true. And then eat this cookie and you'll feel right as rain. Do oracle, natural wisdom, all that is full. It's found everywhere. But let this great feel from, and I believe this imagination that we're doing is taking us back. Or really taking us under, if you like, to foundational reality. And it's allowing us to feel how God feels. See, whether the imagination's perfect doesn't matter, but the feeling is right. You know that. You know that that's how God feels. You know what, when somebody says it and you feel it, you know, yeah, God, that's what you're like. How do you know that? Because you're a part of Him. How could you not know when you let yourself know? How could you not know what God feels? So know this, that at any time you can stop. And even if you can't consciously go there, you can say, God, I'm a part of the light. I'm a part of you. I don't understand anything that's happening. But I connect with you. And I draw my life, my energy, my understanding directly from you. Just do that. That's how simple it is. It can't be difficult. Because in the smart ones, in the strong ones, it can't be difficult. It can't be hard. It's got to be easy so that everybody can do it. And it is easy, but it's been hidden in the darkness until now. But we're there. It's open. It's available. It's free. You can go. You can go. You're free. You're free to fly. You're free to do. Free to become. Free to own your sense of self and treasure it in ways that we've never, ever been able to treasure. The treasure of being you. How beautiful it is. The treasure of being you. And of course, you're hammering it home for me. The discovering of it in you is more precious to me than to see you discover that is, I want to go with you. I want to discover it. If some way I've already discovered some parts of it, but no, I don't know it. I don't know what it is fully to be me. No, I don't. But I want to. God. And I thank you. All right.